You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. Our mission is to empower youth from diverse backgrounds to express themselves, build self-confidence, and develop leadership skills through community broadcasting.
Está escuchando el programa de Radio Juventud de Andy Zanka. Nuestra misión es empoderar a jóvenes de orígenes diversos para que aprendan a expresarse, construyan confianza en sí mismos y desarrollen habilidades de liderazgo a través de la transmisión de radio comunitaria.
Support comes from the Aspen Thrift Shop, where your donations benefit the greater community. Since 2000, the Aspen Thrift Shop has given over $2.5 million to local nonprofit organizations throughout the Roaring Fork Valley. AspenThriftShop.org 925-3121.
And Alpine Bank, locally owned and operated since 1973. Offering full service banking of the Western Slope and Denver, Alpine Bank values the role youth play in building and sustaining our communities.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program on KDNK. My name is Beth Weisong, and I will be your host for the next 2 hours this afternoon. On today's program, we have a very special treat. I am joined in the studio with 7 students from Colorado Rocky Mountain School and the students in the CRMS Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class taught by Eric Skeef have been working the past semester on podcasts, which they will be sharing with us and broadcasting for the first time today. So welcome to the studio, everyone. Can all of you please introduce yourselves and tell us the topic of your podcast that you'll be sharing today?
Yes, hi, my name is Ethan Wexler, and I'll be presenting a podcast on space exploration.
My name is Sophia Jacober.
And my name is John Austin, and our podcast on fish, or migratory fish.
My name is Gordon Davies, My name is Malia Brinson, and we are collaborating on a podcast surrounding sustainable food.
My name is Noah Goyne.
And my name is Dawson Strumpler, and we are presenting our podcast on music.
Wow, thank you. And I think we have one more person who may want to introduce
him. And my name is Eric Skeef, and I'm the teacher.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being here, everyone. I know that you've probably done a lot of work, and we really appreciate you collaborating with Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program and KDNK to broadcast these. So can one of you please tell us how the Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class is structured?
Yeah, so Creative Nonfiction Radio is a semester-long class that we take. We started out by looking at some works by various nonfiction authors, and then we turned to the more radio side of things, where at first we were kind of listening to some different podcasts to get some inspiration. After that, we got in partners and decided on a topic to pursue. At the beginning, it was still more of like a research, and we went out into the streets of Carbondale to see what people thought about our topics. And then after that, we scheduled multiple interviews and collected some audio to put our podcast together, where we learned some editing tools and other stuff that we use to make these final products that you'll hear today.
Great. And it sounds like a lot went into that semester-long project. So, Eric, is there anything else you want to add that...
I think big picture, that one of the things that I really enjoy about this class is that the students are able to get out of the classroom and go interview people in the community. And I feel like in this day and age of fake news and people just going to whichever platform confirms their own views, I really like that they're getting out into the community and talking to people. And one of the things that we talk about is, earlier in the semester, I have the students write down what they think about their topic and what their biases are. And then I really encourage them to remain open to changing their opinions on their topic. And we kind of reflect as we go through the project.
Oh, that's great. So maybe after we play everyone's podcast, we can ask them how their opinion has changed on the topic, if so. So, well, thanks so much, everybody, for being here. We're going to start off with the first podcast, and it is by Ethan Wexler, who is going to be talking or teaching us about space exploration. So thanks for tuning in to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program on KDNK, and we will be back after the podcast.
10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
We got a roll program.
Neil Armstrong reporting the roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on a proper heading.
Most watched spectacles of all time. Apollo 11 launched with an estimated 25 million viewers in the United States alone, and millions more from countries around the world. 3,500 media personnel were present at the launch site, two-thirds of which were from the United States. Through TV, radio, newspaper, and on-site spectating, millions and millions of people experienced the launch. People everywhere became a little closer to the wonders of space because of their exposure to this single event. My name is Ethan Wexler. For years now, I've been fascinated by the wonders of space. This interest first sprung up after watching Neil deGrasse Tyson's show, Cosmos. Because of this interest, I've written a research paper about how space has affected our culture in the United States. And now, I am here to find out where we are left today after the Apollo 11 launch. How much people really know about space? How accessible opportunities are to learn about the universe, and why does it matter that people care about it? It was a cool August night up in Aspen, Colorado. My mom and I decided to go hear an astronomy presentation up at the Sun Deck, a restaurant on the top of Aspen Mountain. During our gondola ride up there, my expectations of the night were relatively low. was maybe an hour before sunset and clouds already rolling in. Not a good sign for an event centered around what planets would be visible. As we reached the top, we were both starving, so we headed inside the restaurant to get some food. Upon entering the building, I noticed one thing immediately. There was nowhere to sit down. Throughout the winter, you can normally find the place packed with hungry skiers and snowboarders, but rarely like this. The building was filled wall to wall with people forced to stand with their food because no one could find a seat. To be honest, I had not expected to see such a crowd at an event about space, let alone one you had to pay to go to. I had no idea there was this many people interested in learning about the components of our solar system, and the age range of them varied greatly. Everyone from children to elderly couples were spending one of their last summer nights at an astronomy presentation. After maybe 10 minutes, the room fell silent. David Aguilar, speaker for the night, came up to the stage. David strayed from the typical solar system presentation about the order of the planets and how far away Mars and Venus are from Earth, and instead, he described the moons of Saturn and Jupiter. He told of Saturn's moon Titan, whose black methane oceans might hold their own forms of life, and the Jovian moon Io, whose surface is constantly changing due to almost 400 active volcanoes. David later spoke about the sounds of the solar system. Unlike Earth, there's no air in space for sound waves to vibrate through, so scientists must synthesize these noises by studying magnetic fields and translating those into sound waves. The science is a bit more complicated than this, and David explained it rather well at his presentation. Specifically, he explained the sound of Saturn. At the end of the presentation, when everyone went outside, lines immediately formed behind two telescopes. One telescope pointed at Mars, and the other at Saturn. Although, when we came outside, the telescope pointed at Mars wasn't functioning, and the other had its view blocked by the clouds. I was worried that this would discourage everyone and the place would become abandoned in minutes. However, this wasn't the case. Almost everyone stayed around. Talked about David's presentation, what he had showed us, and we all just waited for the clouds to dissipate. After a little while, I was fortunate enough to get a glimpse at both planets during a brief break in the clouds, and being able to see the rings of Saturn was unlike anything I've ever experienced. I was taking something so abstract, a thing you hear about since kindergarten, but you're never really able to touch, smell, see, or hear. And finally, was making it real. It used to be something that was just there, like growing up learning about lions and their great manes. These creatures can be halfway across the world, so you might only see them in your storybooks. Yet when the day comes that you go to the zoo and you see the mighty creature only a few feet away, it becomes real and you recognize it more as a part of your world. On top of Aspen Mountain, I saw the great mane of Saturn. I could see the individual rings with my own eyes, and it brought the whole universe a little bit closer. I suspect this is why people came to the event, to experience the universe. If a person can learn about space, it's a great thing, but the connection is made when you make the abstract a little more concrete. When I spoke with David Aguilar later on, he told me how he first came into contact with space, how it first made its way into his life. David was not only a speaker at the Aspen Skies event, but is also the author of 11 different astronomy books for children, a past director of science information at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, and is currently working on the New Horizons mission, in which a probe will fly by an object nicknamed Ultima Thule in the Kuiper asteroid belt past Neptune.
I was a marine biologist in college, and I stopped by a planetarium one day and went inside to see what they did, fell in love with it, volunteered, and 6 months later, somebody hired me to direct the planetarium. So it was the mere fact that I put myself in a place that I might not normally have been in, but I had interests, and it worked out for me.
David's story made me wonder how common it is that those who don't start out with a focus on space switch what they are studying once they are exposed to the wonders of the stars.
is a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children do get.
I got a glimpse into the amount of students who were interested in knowing more about astronomy when I visited UC Berkeley. During my time on campus, I sat in on an astronomy lecture given by Professor Alex Filipenko. Roughly 150 people were in attendance for this one class, and Alex commented that this was close to all of the students when he began his lecture. His lesson today was on the multitudes of different stars in the galaxy, the different sizes and temperatures, and most interestingly, how they are born. A star is born in a nebula. These are glowing masses of interstellar gas, and over millions of years those gas molecules coalesce, and heat is applied, and a star is born. After class, I was curious about why all these students were here. Yes, the lecture was interesting to me, but were 150 students all here because they were fascinated by the subject? To find out the details, I went to the front of the lecture hall to speak with Professor Filipenko. He was a very approachable man, with a personality and enthusiasm that was able to fill the room. His smile was wide and stretched all across his face. He had short brown hair that was on its way to turning gray, and a t-shirt with an image of a nebula, the red and white print, A Star is Born, presumably in reference to the new movie. His appearance reminded me of the grandpa, Carl Fredrickson, from the Disney film Up. If Carl had been a bit more enthusiastic and an astrophysicist, he would be a spitting image of Alex Filipenko. Thankfully, he was willing to talk to me on a walk to his office and had this to say about his students' motivations.
So, is this a mandatory class that we're just in, or is this an optional course?
This class is optional, although it does satisfy the physical science breadth requirement that UC Berkeley has for all of its students. In other words, there are certain requirements in many different fields so that students get a broad education, not just a deep and narrow one in their major. And this class is one of the classes that satisfies the physical sciences breadth requirement. But students are not required to take specifically this class. This is one of several options they have.
He was essentially saying that when given the option of multiple science classes to take, many students choose to take astronomy. And for some, that choice unlocks a passion that follows them well beyond this classroom. I saw this very directly because on our walk to his office, there were around 10 different students following him to his office hours, just waiting to ask him more questions about stars. I found a parallel to this in the Roaring Fork Valley, in my home. At Aspen High School, there's a class called Oceanography, Astronomy, Meteorology, in which students learn about these three named topics. One such student is Tyler Green. Tyler is a senior at Aspen High and has gained a passion for space through this class. Now, she is a large part of the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. Because she has had access to this class, Tyler has found a passion that she is now able to share with anyone who attends ACE's monthly astronomy nights, much like the event I attended atop Aspen Mountain. I was curious to see what some of these smaller events looked like, so my dad and I attended one in early October. Yet another cloudy night up in Aspen, but this time the weather was clearly affecting attendance of the event. Six of us were in the audience. Tyler Green was the speaker tonight, and she gave an astounding presentation on the Big Bang and the expanding forces of the universe. She taught about how so many of our atoms come from supernova, the beautifully chaotic explosion of a dying star, and thus all of us are essentially made up of stardust. It was great to hear from another high schooler about this topic. In my experience, it is so rare to find another student who is as focused on the stars as they are on the snow beneath their feet. And she spoke about this topic with such interest and insight that it made it evident that she really cared about the subject at hand. And it was because of this passion she had that I needed to stick around to ask her some more questions. As a high school student, why does she think it is so important to teach people about space?
I would say that we spend such a large percentage of our lives looking down, looking at our phones or stuck in school, just the next step, right? We look at, okay, like what college am I going to get into? What job am I going to have? And it's really valuable, I think, to look up and out in these huge unknown questions that we can find through these fields. It's really valuable, and I recommend it to anyone.
After hearing her answer, I realized that I had to reflect on something. How relevant is all of this? Yes, as a high school student, it is important to look up from your phone every so often. Maybe even more important if you're looking up at a galaxy that is infinitely expanding, infinitely ginormous, right above your head. But there are those things back here on Earth. Every day, every week, every month, there is news. There is new news about a war, a shooting, a rally. So why should we be so focused on space right now? I turned to Gordon Scriven for his insight to this question. Gordon is a graduate from Penn State University and is currently the chief engineer of OptiKnowledge Systems Incorporated, a company whose roots are in the aerospace industry.
By this exploring and learning more, it does actually help things on Earth. You know, there's so much came out of the space program and current even defense stuff that the general public isn't even aware of a lot of these technologies. So by pushing the envelopes and beginning to explore, we're going to learn more, develop things we didn't realize were going to be beneficial to us. So we'll be some benefit on Earth now. But I think it's human nature to explore, and when you become comfortable with that environment, to move there. So I think naturally the colonization will occur, whether you want to or not. But space access needs to become cost effective, and reasons to go to space needs to be profitable. So I think that colonization will be a natural progression at some point.
Gordon brought up a very interesting point. It is in our nature to colonize new lands. And NASA is already on its way to this point. Prototype habitats have been constructed, and there is a continuous search for a water source on Mars. The means of getting there are being created right now. SpaceX has built its Falcon Heavy rocket and test launched it last February. This rocket is capable of reaching the moon and delivering cargo to the International Space Station several times over with its reusable rockets. NASA is constructing its own rocket, called the Space Launch System, or SLS, which will be the largest rocket ever built, and is expected to set out for Mars around 2020.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can, far above the world. Planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing I can do.
And yet, because this was such an immense question, I looked for David Aguilar's point of view as well.
Here's the reality of what you just said. We spend very little in research money in outer space. We spend possibly 1,000 times more on military weapons to protect our markets and countries overseas for business. And I understand that. But the truth, really, when it comes down to the bottom line, is we have always been a species of explorers. We left Africa, we came across the Bering Straits into the New World. Columbus jumped in his ships and pointed them west and said, I'm going that direction. The Vikings did it. It's part of who we are, and it's in our genetic code. We have conquered the Earth. We've got the solar system in front of us to move out into, and then we have the stars beyond. It's part of who we are. It's the reason why the human species is different than any other species on Earth, because it explores. And so consequently, outer space is critical to us. It's critical if there is a catastrophe here on this planet. It's critical if we overpopulate it and climate change becomes rampant and on many parts of the planet we can't live any longer because of the huge hurricanes and the weather and the heat. So outer space was meant for us to expand into and to continue being who we've always been. We are an exploring species.
So, why should we care about space? Because this is where we are from. We are made from the dying stars of our galaxies. And yet so little of our government budget is being put towards the research to study these dying stars, to study the cosmos as a whole. And as a species so centered around exploration, it is inevitable that we expand back into the stars. We have always sailed to new lands. We have always been curious about what is out there. It is important for everyone to know about space and have access to space, because it is where we are from and is inevitably where we are going. Is it in our nature to be so curious that we must close the gap between us and the unknown? As humans, we must walk a few feet forward, reach out, and touch the lion's mane.
If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Andy Zinka Youth Empowerment Program, and on today's show, we are joined by students from Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Eric Skeef's Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class. The students are presenting their podcast that they've been working on all semester, and we just heard from Ethan Wexler, who was clearly talking about space exploration. So thanks so much, Ethan.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was really, really enjoyable. Tell us, how did you choose that topic of space exploration? I know you went into that a little bit in your podcast, but what prompted you?
Yeah, so this has always been something that I've had an interest in. And in Eric's class, I had the opportunity to work by myself on this program. And so I chose a topic that was really personal to me and my own interest. And like I said, I worked on a research paper for Eric as well that had the same type of topic. So it was a topic I'm comfortable with and really enjoyable for me to work on.
Wanted to learn more about it, right?
Yeah.
Tell us, how did your ideas about the topic change? Did you, what did you learn more about?
Towards the beginning, I was really focused on space exploration and what the government's doing. But as I talked to more and more people, their stories of why they're interested in space and how that can reach out to others. Other high schoolers like me, like we talked to Tyler about, and their stories really kind of came to me in a better way than the government side of things.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this was a pretty long process all semester long. What was the most challenging part about creating this story?
I think the most challenging part was cutting down the interviews I got. I talked with David and Gordon and Tyler and Alex and all of these people. I had about 45 minutes per interview, and for Tyler and Alex, I recorded the lectures and the presentations. So it was cutting those back and taking the really personal parts of them rather than just putting their entire interviews in there like I originally really wanted right. to do, but that would have been multiple hours. Right. So cutting back was the challenge there, really.
Yeah, I understand. It's you really have to be decisive, but even though all the information is important, it's really a challenge to figure out what's the most important for your story that you're trying to get across. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, great job on that. What was the part you enjoyed most?
I really enjoyed getting to talk with people who have been doing this for years now, like Gordon and Alex and David. Their insight to this topic and what they had to say about it came so naturally to them and with such passion that it was really inspirational to see where they've taken this enjoyment for space and brought it into their adult careers and lives for years now. And that was a really interesting and really powerful thing to see.
Yeah, it sounds like you learned a lot from people you spoke with.
Yeah, they were great people to talk to about all of this.
Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to add before we play the next story?
I'd like to give a shout out to Hayden Austin. It's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Hayden.
All right. Well, thanks, Ethan, so much for being here today, and congratulations on broadcasting your story.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Yeah.